I'm John Batts with Professor Sean McMeekin. The new book is To Overthrow the World, The Rise and Fall and Rise of Communism. The professor has done us the favor of putting together in a continual narrative how the idea of communism, the Communist Manifesto, penned by Karl Marx with Friedrich Engels, his co-pilot, how that has influenced different cultures where it never was native. Traveled that book, that those phrases have traveled around the world and continue to reverberate. But I learned from the professor that communism, Marxist-Leninism, or just Marxism, prospers only in conjunction with extreme violence. As the professor says again and again, no communist dictatorship has ever come to power through the ballot box. It's extreme violence and the disintegration of norms, that's the modern word we're using, around the governance that creates conditions for this fiction of the dictatorship, let's say the old-fashioned way, conspiracy of equals. We need to touch on a man named Babeuf. Gracchus Babeuf was his nom de guerre, a Frenchman who was executed for being a troublemaker. What do we need to know about Babeuf that is inspirational to those who come across his final speech? I believe it was in a courtroom.
Well, that's right. Now, Babeuf was drawing on certain ideas common in the French Enlightenment, but not necessarily the ones that we're most familiar with today. A lot of people have read Rousseau, and they might have discussed the ideas in the social contract about this idealized republican community where there is a kind of binary opposition between those inside and outside the community, the idea of the general will, the idea almost of, to some extent, of a state being able to label those outside the circle of loyalties, enemies of the people. But someone who was writing at the same time as Rousseau, a little bit less well-known, Etienne Morley, penned an even more extreme work, which was far more literal-minded in his advocacy of what we would later call communism. And in fact, this work, unlike Rousseau, was a staple of the Marxist-Leninist canon in the Eastern Bloc countries and the Soviet Union. And Babeuf was drawing on this work, which actually was quite explicit in advocating not just a kind of idealized radical republican political community, but also the overturning of private property and ultimately even the centralization, the storage of everything from grain and foodstuffs to the things that people need for daily life in some type of central storehouse where it all be rationed out amongst the people. So Babeuf is drawing on a very radical strain from the French Enlightenment, and then in turn, of course, he's also helping to set this new ideal or example, not least because although he failed, he was executed for the various capital crimes involved in the so-called conspiracy of the equals when they actually did try to overthrow the French government and overturn private property. And there were also elements of this, which you were going to see in a lot of future communist actions, uprisings, putsches, revolutions, which involved mutinies. That is, they were trying to promote mutinies in the armed forces. In this case, it was really more the police than the armed forces, because the armed forces were a little bit less crucial, at least in Babeuf's plans. But the idea is he knew that he would need armed muscle. He knew he would need to convert those from inside the police to basically support the revolution from the inside. And he was quite open about the fact that this required cleansing political violence. There was a lot of talk of these people being unmasked effectively as class enemies. Basically, anyone who would oppose the revolution would unmask themselves as a class enemy and apologist for the capitalist ruling classes, and they would have to then be, of course, crushed and destroyed and exterminated. So although Babeuf failed, he established a precedent. He established an example. And he also had some luck and fortune, not just in his own skill for public relations, but one of his co-conspirators who was spared execution, Philippe Buonarroti, later wrote a kind of heroic insider history of the conspiracy of the equals, which came out right after the French Revolution of 1830, so it helped to popularize the ideas. And so the legend of Babeuf, the conspiracy of the equals, then helped in turn to inspire Marx. And I think Marx drew from it not just some of the specific ideas about the abolition of private property and state control of the economy and planning and those kinds of things, but also the importance, really, the centrality of political violence to the project.
The communards, March of 1871 to May of 1871, suppressed violently. Men and women and children died in the hands of the retaking of Paris. Marx had nothing to do with the commune. He wasn't in Paris at the time. He was in London. And yet he adopted it. Why? Why did he present himself as if he'd inspired the commune?
Well, it's a great question, John. So a lot of Marx's apologists have often said that Marx can't be blamed for the various excesses and crimes against humanity committed by the regimes inspired by him in the 20th century because, well, he wasn't there, he wasn't alive, and who knows what he would have thought. The closest that the world came to any type of communist revolution during Marx's lifetime was undoubtedly the Paris Commune of 1871. And you're absolutely right that Marx played very little role in either inspiring or organizing it. He, of course, wasn't there, he wasn't on the ground. Although he led this organization called the First Working Man's International Association, which was blamed by the French government, and this is in the midst of a chaotic war with Prussia, the Franco-Prussian War, Marx's organization was blamed in a kind of general sense for having inspired the uprising, even though that wasn't really true. Marx could very well have dissociated himself from it. He could have disowned the Paris Commune, which he pretty much knew was going to go down in a blaze of violence as soon as the Prussian army and the French Republican forces just kind of worked out a settlement who was going to basically restore order in Paris. He was offered the opportunity. He certainly could have distanced himself from it, but instead he went the other way. He embraced it even as it was going down in this kind of blaze of violence, even as the communards were taking dozens of bourgeois hostages, including the Archbishop of Paris, and there was this kind of almost orgy of violence where they were throwing women and children into the battle. Far from disowning any of that, Marx embraced it all and said this was proof of its veracity, proof of its sincerity. That is, to have a true communist revolution, you had to kill class enemies, and women and children would have to be thrown into the battle.
30 seconds, go ahead.
So Marx made it perfectly clear that even if this revolution might not have been perfect, it was still going to set an example for the future precisely because it was both radical and extremely violent, that the political violence was central to the project.
We're headed to the 20th century. To Overthrow the World, the Rise and Fall and Rise of Communism, Professor Sean McMeekin is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.